You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 27 May, we've got US durable good orders data due 2:30 p.m. our time. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Alex Dace from Thombo Wealth. Those Altron results, they were good. They were really, really good. We're seeing some good turnaround there. And then Barlow World, but I'm not sure that they matter. We've still got that standby offer in place, which runs, if memory serves, until end of June. Keith McLachlan from Element Investment Managers, Pick and Pay. He says there's some value there, although he's doing some of the parts, but we'll get his view on that. Eva August from Century 21, sustainable homes no longer niche, now the minimum standard needed. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, we're winning back customers one at a time, says Pick and Pay Sean Summers. Of the 110 odd affected stores, 18 are now profitable and won't be shut. Business Day, Reserve Bank renews call to narrow inflation target band. Deliberations unlikely to influence Thursday's Monetary Policy Committee decision. At morning markets, the US was closed yesterday, Memorial Day. The East mostly red. We got Sydney up 0.1%. Tokyo's down 0.25%. Hong Kong, 0.4% lower. And Tencent, literally, couple of cents in the red, 0.01% down. Commodities are mostly red. Gold futures is green, but only by a dollar, $3,375. Brent is $64.56. Platinum, $1,084. Palladium, $994. The Rand is $17.86. Bitcoin, $109,700. And top 40 opening call, 75 points to the red, a little under 0.1%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace and Thombo Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning as always. The Altron results. This is a company that's been through a lot over the many, many decades. A couple of years ago, of course, spun out Bytes Technology. That's an interesting investment on its own. The results yesterday from Altron, really strong. Your take on the results and the opportunity here with Altron?
Good morning, Simon. Certainly, the turnaround in Altron over the last 2.5 years has been phenomenal. If you look at EBIT margins, it expanded from about 5 to about 10%. Mm. That has really driven the strong earnings growth we've seen over this period. It's also been backed by very good cash flows. So what exactly is Altron doing? Well, they first of all got a platforms business. That's a very high annuity type business. So for the viewers out there, for example, businesses like a Netstar, that industry, you pay a monthly subscription there. That business has really recovered quite nicely, and there seems to be a lot of optionality still in them, specifically in the offshore side of the business. Then they've got a fintech, where they also give the small SMEs devices and assist with value-added services and so forth. We know that market has been growing exponentially in South Africa, especially if you move away from cash towards payment systems. So they're doing very well there. And so that's the, I would say, the part of the business really looks interesting. Within that, there's still opportunity to, of course, cross-sell within the business. For example, if you show the example there that if retailers that could be using, you know, the platform business both on the Netstar as well as the payment, and they could use security side because they've got a bunch of other IT services as well in the business. So they can then sell, call it a bundle type of offerings and so forth, get higher revenue from their customers. Now, the IT services business is struggling at the moment. That is due to a couple of legacy issues. There's some business there that's struggled. And, of course, a general economic activity, which is not good because that's not annuity type. It's more discretionary spending. And we know a lot of companies have been withholding spending. So I think that's also where, if they can unlock that value there, could be interesting. A final point I want to highlight there is that even though accounting earnings has been very strong, the cash earnings in the business is very good. And I do think you should look out for going forward because it's very likely they're going to change depreciation policy in the business. Mm-hmm. And that will boost earnings growth going forward because the earnings will probably be more in line with cash earnings. So that could surprise the market. You could see higher ROEs, higher earnings. So I think momentum is still there. Done a tremendous job. and I think the prospect still looks good as well.
They really have done lots of turnarounds in the world. Ultron really is making it happen. Barlow World had numbers out, maybe a little disappointing, but they're still under that standby offer. I mean, I'm not sure if they're going to remain listed, and if we need to sort of focus on the results. But I mean, the revenue was down by a bit. Russia, perhaps more than anything, is their challenge.
Yeah, so let me first start on the results. I would agree it was a disappointing set of results. There are obviously different pockets of excellence. There's, for example, Mongolia continues to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And Ingrain business has come up from a low base, but it's still a disappointing business. I think for me, if you look at the return metrics, specifically return on investment capital, those ratios are all coming down at the moment. Yes, it is a reflection of the poor economic cycle, but also indication if this deal does not go through, I think the downside to the share price seems for me quite material at the moment. So I have to wait until end of next month, as you say, to see if the deal will go through. I think you'll probably see a rush of activity just before close, so it's difficult to say if it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot of hoops that needs to be jumped over here, and I think the delay of receiving the money is going to be quite long. So the current discount of only about 11% doesn't seem particularly enticing, but of course there's an option that offer could be increased. One of the big shareholders, Solchester, is asking for 130 rand instead of 120. So, still a lot of moving parts there. I'm not too sure, but I do see quite sizable downside if the deal does not proceed. There's been some question marks about the governance and the structures and so forth. So, I think a lot of investors will not be too happy.
Yeah, and I mean, the stock was, sub 90 pre the offer, and to your point, if anything, the situation has weakened since that initial offer back in early December. We'll leave it there. Alex Dace, you find him, Mthombo Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan, Element Investment Managers. Keith, appreciate the early morning. Pick and Pay results. I mean, they're still making a loss, but less of a loss. Profitability or break even pushed out to 2028, which now syncs up with the extended contract from Sean Summers. But you're looking at Pick and Pay perhaps more of as a sort of sum of the parts and thinking that there is definitely some value there.
Good morning, Simon. Absolutely. So, and I don't think anyone would argue that Boxer isn't a good business. Mm-hmm. It is a great business. It's got a 30 billion rand market cap. But Pick and Pay, despite listing it, still owns 65.6% of it. So if we back that out of the enterprise value of Pick and Pay, we actually get a negative 2.8 billion. In other words, the market is paying you not just to invest in Boxer, but to invest in Boxer via Pick and Pay and back a turnaround. The real question is, will the turnaround work? And turnarounds are hard. Mm-hmm. Retail businesses are momentum-driven businesses, because as volumes pick up, it becomes a virtuous cycle where you have more buying power, you get greater operating leverage, and you pass those on to customers, which give you more volumes, and hence the cycle continues.
Yeah.
So a turnaround in this space is hard, but they've got a lot of things, I don't want to call them tailwinds because the environment's tough, but they've got a lot of things in their favor. One, they actually do have significant turnover, 75 billion in turnover in their Pick and Pay, not the Boxer. Don't look at the consolidated results. Just look at the Pick and Pay segmental results. 75 billion of turnover, 4.2 billion of net cash on the group balance sheet. And you've got a really, really strong manager who's done this before, who's now aligned himself and has a little bit more security on tenure for the turnaround. This is potentially a very, very interesting route to invest in Boxer to get a turnaround optionality.
And that's the point. I mean, what you essentially hear, I mean, by going into Pick and Pay, as you say, you get a good slice of Boxer. I don't want to say let's say it's de-risked in a sense because of the negative valuation that's been put onto Pick and Pay when you take the cash and the Boxer holding into account.
Certainly. So, a way to think about it is that if you're paying fair value for Boxer,
mm-hmm.
you're by buying the Pick and Pay shares in the market, you're getting Pick and Pay at a negative that's round up to 3 billion discount. but there's 4.2 billion on the balance sheet. In other words, the market's betting that either Pick n Pay is worth zero, and therefore they don't want to take the risk, or two, it's going to spend not 4.2, it's going to spend seven or a bit more on the turnaround and Pick n Pay. But in fact, like when you have a look at, first of all, their forecasts in terms of trading profit turnaround, how much capital it will take to arrive at that, you know, 4.2 feels about right. They sufficiently capitalized at a balance sheet level to get this right. And then second of all, you go and have a look at, because obviously they're closing stores, so group level turnover is a little distorted. You have to look at like for like, so same store comparable sales. Like for like, and there you can start to see the turnaround. You go back and you look at it on a half year versus half year basis, back into 24, all the way into H2 25, you can see that turnaround happening. You can see the trough in sales, like for like, turning around is now, in fact, H2 25 company-owned stores turnaround, like-for-like sales was 3.6%. You chop out about 2.1% inflation. That's real volume growth. So the turnaround, the cadence of the sales are moving in the right direction, and that's very, very important.
Yeah, and that's what Sean Summers was saying. I mean, he says we've got to win the customers back one by one. He says we are winning them back. It's a slow process, particularly one by one. A quick question on Aspen. You and I were chatting this yesterday, and you're saying, you know, even if you remove the sterile business, which really you shouldn't because it's something which they spent billions to build, there's value there relative to its global peers.
Certainly. So if you back out the manufacturing business or sterile business from the group and you assume it's worth zero, they lost a major contract and it's very, very disappointing. But in the last financial year, it only contributed 20% of the bottom line. But back it out, assume it's worth zero. All group debt attaches to just the commercial pharma business, and that carries on ticking along according to history. You're buying the whole of Aspen on about a 9.2 times EV EBITDA versus its global comparable peers. You know, they trade on about 15, 16 times EV EBITDA. So if manufacturing is worthless, commercial pharma is still very, very attractive at these levels.
Yeah, I take that point. And of course, manufacturing, not worthless. They have those plants. They do exist. And anyone who wanted to build them would have to spend the billions. Keith McLachlan, Element Investment Managers, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today is around Pick n Pay. Is it offering an opportunity for investors? Keith makes a compelling argument there in terms of the sort of a sum of the parts. So it's not quite a sum of the parts, but what they got with Boxer Cash says Pick n Pay is worth nothing. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Eva August, CEO of Century 21 South Africa. Eva, appreciate the time. It's sort of an evolution. It's more than that. It's a ground shift happening in new homes. It's around sustainable. This is no longer niche, particularly for younger, particularly for perhaps more tech savvy. The sustainability is becoming a minimum standard in many senses.
You're so right, Simon, and thank you. It's lovely to chat to you. It is. Yeah, we've gone past the time where it's a trendy thing, it's fashionable thing, where it's cool to be a minimalist and tread lightly on the earth. It's now really responsibility, and everyone is responsible to live this way to whatever extent we're capable of.
It's going to be things, I imagine. It's going to be solar, it's inverters. It's probably even simple things like just, you know, how well's the building sealed, particularly in the Joburg winters. They seem small, but they're important and they are significant.
Very much. It is more than that. It used to be this thing of inverters and solar power. And now it's about how to reuse the resources that are becoming more and more scarce, resources that are becoming more and more expensive. How to capture and utilize water correctly, how to insulate buildings, you know, build right the first time, this idea that the longest distance between two points is taking the shortcut. Mm-hmm. So do things the long way around, build correctly for insulation, for resource retention, for less space. I think COVID also taught us that. COVID taught us not to waste as much from a footprint, from usable space, from resources, and it's only the beginning of that.
And this is in many senses as well. I mean, as I said up front, this is perhaps more the younger and more tech savvy. It might seem a little niche at this point, but it really is future-proofing. This is the future of homes.
Very much. You know, we used to hear this thing here and there as I was going through the real estate industry and career, and the saying that, you know, you don't make land. You don't make any more of planet Earth. We've got what we've got. And the world is changing so much. Humanity is changing so much. We're living longer. Our families are getting bigger and smaller. It depends around the world. And so what we do have left, this planet, this country, this city, we've got to take care of the space that we've got and make it lekker and cool for everybody. And that's taking care of how we live and what we live on.
This is obviously predominantly going to be new homes. Are developers catering to this market? Are we seeing developers coming on board and building these type of new houses or apartments?
Very much. Simon, the developers that are not keeping up or trying to stay ahead of the curve of sustainability are the ones that don't have a future, because the demand for that type of sustainability is all the way down to the last end user, the client that's going to be using this property in 20 years from now, not just immediately. And so those ones that are not asking those questions, how to improve on that, and the developers that are not complying with the consciousness around this that is actually coming from government and from council and from all the service providers of the scarce resources that we have. Non-compliance of that, combined with staying ahead of that trend and those tools and systems, they're not going to be in business, I'm afraid.
Are we seeing finance options for the green space? I mean, my immediate thought is if I'm doing green, I might get a slightly better home loan just because of the green of the house. Are the financial institutions coming to the party?
Very much. In the beginning, when I say in the beginning, I mean like when we first started experiencing extreme load shedding, the finance institutions were popping up here and there to make financing options available for people to take care of the sustainability of not having power. But it's become more commonplace, more accessible. It's not just the finance institutions, but the service providers of these forms of technology are also becoming registered with the National Credit Regulator to offer these services and tools and products in a way that for the client is also sustainable. Me as the homeowner, you as the tenant, the landlord, in a way that the technology is being upgraded for these efficient systems and services in your financing option. And when we look at market share currently in property real estate transactions between all the banks, the ones that are competing very well compared to the rest of them in market share of home loans are the ones that are able to offer the products and services that go with this type of sustainable solution, because in a lot of cases, it's a deal maker or a deal breaker.
Yeah, I take your point on that. We're talking, of course, new developments here, but there's a lot of existing stock out there already. There's stuff we can do beyond just the old-fashioned sort of LED light bulbs, which I think everyone's surely got by now. But we can, to degrees, also we can retrofit existing homes.
Very much. There are people that are becoming more and more specialized in looking at what we've got and saying, don't throw it away because it's cracked and it's broken. Mm-hmm. Let's redo it. Let's enhance it. And more often than not, it's not huge changes that are required. Minimal adjustments to the way the electricity feeds the property, the way the COC used to be compliance certificate versus the way it is now. There are different options as well from council in terms of how to run, offer, and manage resources of power. It ran out a few months ago through council in parts of Gauteng where the technology being implemented in certain meters across certain developments and existing older homes allows council, in fact, to, and, you know, like it, don't like it, it allows council to actually control the consumption and the usage of certain appliances in your home in order to preserve that energy. And council is also seeing ways that we can incentivize people that have invested in solar systems and green solutions and giving them a rebate for feeding energies back into the grid to support the traffic lights in the street, the street lights around the corner. So there's more and more, I mean, reward systems used to be in your gym membership and in your shopping membership. Now there's reward systems coming up for being more green and more conscious in how we live.
We live in a great future. Eva August, CEO, Century 21 South Africa. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Philip Short yesterday from Flagship Asset Management. We're talking around how they were tweaking offshore portfolios in the wake of the tariff wars. We asked how you were making, if you were making changes to your offshore portfolios. Evenly split, a third saying yes, most definitely. Another third saying no, this will pass. And the last third saying not yet, but may have to. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. We have our winners for our breakfast. Keep an eye on your inbox for the invite, and a huge thanks to everyone who entered. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Greencoat Renewables.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.